Hello and welcome to the first episode of Relatively Football, a new football podcast, taking a look at our relationships to the game, both family and chosen family, and all the reasons through community why we love this game so much. Also taking an in-depth look at women's football all around the world where we can. My name's Theo Lloyd-Hughes. I'm here talking to you from New Orleans, and I'm here with my sister, Flo.
Hello, all the way from London.
Getting the family back together in the name of women's football.
Literally.
We're just days away now from the start of the FAWSL season, which is very exciting. And there's been so much going on. It's been kind of hard to concentrate. It feels like every day I open up Twitter and it's just sort of a million storylines.
Yeah, it's been a strange few months, to say the least. Pandemic aside, I guess, which sounds like a strange thing to say. But with everything that happened in England, especially, obviously, I'm sure you'll touch on the NWSL and what happened there on your side of the world. But in England, we were obviously really disappointed that the season came to a halt and then was unfortunately cancelled. And there were lots of people who were hoping that that wasn't going to be the case. Talks of it being for financial reasons, but then in reality, actually, lots of players said that they didn't feel safe. And that's perfectly allowed. And if they don't feel safe playing football, they don't feel safe playing football. But about 6 months later, we're finally here, ready to begin again. We had the Community Shield over the weekend, which was a nice warm-up. It probably wasn't as exciting as some people had hoped, especially the first half. But the second half, fantastic goal from Millie Bright. So I think that was a nice little warm-up. And I think people are ready for what is going to be a big season with some big names. And I think it's going to be hopefully one of the best seasons that English domestic women's football's ever had.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I feel like there's been a real, it feels like the game has been sort of growing steadily for a long time now, but just in regards to the way transfers have been handled this summer, the Community Shield, like you said, kind of making a welcome return, and the visibility of the Women's Champions League, I think for the first time, it really feels like there's maybe more consistent investment in the game and more consistent attention in the game. Obviously, Harder's transfer for a record fee is, you know, concrete evidence of that. And I think that's really exciting to feel like there's something, you know, a concrete step to put your foot on and believe this league is going in a more sustainable direction.
Definitely, definitely. And I think after a lot of narrative, it's not just from the media, but from fans about a possible regression of women's football internationally, I think it's really promising and reassuring that it hasn't scared off a lot of big investors in the game and that commitment is still there. But before we get into the real nitty-gritty, maybe we should tell our new listeners, however many there are, why we started this podcast and our relationship to the game and why we thought this was an interesting idea and people might listen to it.
Yeah, I think football for us, or for me, I don't want to speak on your behalf, but it's always been about sort of that funny place between your back garden and the team you support, or the terrace, or, you know, watching it on a Sunday or whatever. And so that mixture of sort of community, both in your family and in these very small groups, and then community in these massive sort of congregations, I think is what football means to me. And I think what for a lot of people, especially those with siblings, this breaks a lot of barriers maybe that otherwise sort of traditional male football communities harbor. And so I think for us, it was kind of, we've always really enjoyed football in all shapes and forms. And so maybe drawing on why we have that relationship and how that makes us love the game that is so exciting right now for women's football.
Yeah. And I think the male ally word can be a bit cliche, but I think it is really important. And I love the fact that you've become so passionate about the game and are now writing about women's football and, you know, posting about on social media and bringing your friends and your, you know, kind of network into a space where they may not have been before. And I think it's really refreshing to see new people follow the game and become so passionate about and realize why it's such a great sport and why it's so entertaining. And I think that's one of the things that I really wanted to do and start a podcast is because I think the fact that we are siblings both sort of now working in women's football is pretty unique. And to have that sort of relation, not only relationship to the game, but take on the game is pretty unique, to be able to look through the game in the lens of a family relationship, whether that's, you know, us, you know, who are actually, you know, genetically related, or people who feel like they're family with each other and have built that bond. And I think we hope we're going to do that through this podcast, is we're going to interview people who have a bond through football, who found football together. And, you know, we've always been playing football together. We've always loved football together. We support the same men's team, and we've always really kind of had that shared passion and love for the game. So I always think it's really interesting hearing other people's stories. And we know in men's and women's football, there's some great sibling stories, the Nevilles, the Mewises, you know, the Jameses. There's so many. And I think we're hoping that we will be bringing those stories. We may not get those big interviews in year one, but we hope.
You wait.
But we also will be bringing, you know, in people we know who share those stories and that experience.
Cool. Well, look, we'll shine. Do a quick news segment now on what some of the biggest stories going on this week. Starting with the new NBC deal for international American viewers, as well as a DAZN stream for German broadcasting. It's quite exciting, and I know a lot of people in the game, and obviously you, Flo, work in the game, will be really excited to see this. I think as an outsider, or someone on the international market, it's going to be sad to have my free FA player stream broken up to now having to figure out how I can break into the Fort Knox of NBC and the 50 games they're going to be showing on there. But it is really exciting to see the women's game, and it's obviously with Mewis and Lavelle being a big part of that, kind of breakout internationally.
Yeah, and who knows if that deal would have happened without Mewis, Lavelle, Kerr coming over. I'm not so sure.
Well, Australia is still on the FA player,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, that's true. To give the FA their credit, because I know I probably do criticize them quite a lot, but the FA player is a fantastic product and they deserve a lot.
I was a believer.
They deserve a lot of credit for Kool-Aid. That, to have access to a free product of really decent quality streaming. You mentioned DAZN there. Now, when DAZN launched in most of their markets, they're in North America, they're not in England, but they're in German-speaking Europe and they're in Japan. When they launched, they had streaming issues in pretty much every single market they launched in. And that's a global streaming company backed by huge international investment. And they had issues. So the fact that the FA player has managed to be global with, tech hiccups. But at the end of the day, the FA is a national governing body and it has to focus on grassroots. And we're in a bit of a limbo where it's looking after the elite side of the women's game. And there's questions about whether the Premier League might eventually take control of the WSL. But I think the FA does a lot of credit for that. And it'll be interesting how this does impact the viewing figures.
How do you feel just quickly seeing NBC mirror BT's coverage, I suppose, is what we're going to assume this weekend? Villa City, Arsenal, Reading and Manchester United versus Chelsea are the games NBC are going to be broadcasting. Do you feel like they will just, it'll mirror coverage in England with BT Sport? Or do you think with Mewis and Lavelle, there might be sort of a real surge onto NBC abroad?
It'll be interesting what investment they put into it. So what is going to be the production value? Are they going to have it like the Premier League? Is there going to be a studio with people sitting around a desk and having a chat? How long is the sort of feed-in program going to be? With WSL games on BT Sport, there's normally only like a 15-minute pre-match window where you're going to have three presenters touch side having a chat. There's not a lot of sort of build up and the schedule doesn't offer for that. Second thing I think which is really important is the marketing of it. I don't think BT Sport market their games enough. Even if they have the rights, people a lot of the time don't know where to go to watch the games. You wouldn't necessarily know BT Sport have the rights to it or are showing it. And I think that's what's really important is BT Sport will tweet about Premier League games they have, Champions League, UFC, the big rights they have all day long, but they really rarely tweet about women's football. They showed the UEFA Women's Champions League. The final was available for free. They did market it a little bit, but I don't think enough. They've got some WSL games that are going to be able to view for free. So I'm just hoping they really push the marketing side of it, because I think that's the big issue, is that it's great that people can watch stuff for free, but they're not going to watch it unless they know where to watch it and how to watch it. And that's the big gap that I think we're currently missing in the UK.
On that note, the NWSL does return this weekend as well, in a sort of strange mirroring of the both transatlantic leagues. The Washington Spirit will be playing Sky Blue on Saturday at 7 in the UK, 1 on the East Coast of the United States. That's available Twitch internationally and will be on CBS proper in the US. And I think with similar with this kind of late announcement of NBC getting involved, I think in the States, it's really great to have CBS on board and moving around college football slots to accommodate the NWSL and women's soccer. But I think there's still a lot of confusion around what games are going to be shown, how you watch these games, what these games even mean in regards to competitive football versus friendlies. So I really encourage people to go and check out the NWSL on Saturday, but what it will look like, I'm really yet to know. On more kind of very important NWSL news, there's obviously been a big development this week with Delroy Hansen and the Utah Soccer Group and some of the kind of atrocities going on in the ownership there and how often women are degraded in the athletic realm when it comes to stuff like marketing and not just looking for equal pay, but basically being wanted to be treated like human beings and athletes. And it's both been amazing work from the RSL Soapbox crew on SB Nation and The Athletic for kind of making sure that employees are being heard and seeing these players really make stand up and make a difference. But I think it's also been a real culture shock and shift for kind of how we want to see the game grow. We want to see CBS, NBC get involved, but how at the end of the day, capitalism over basic human decency is not the answer. And so I think seeing the formation of the Black Players of the NWSL this week and seeing Delroy Hansen be rightly removed from his position and from what we can tell, being forced to sell the club or three clubs, I think is really, really encouraging just for what we want to see in regards to the people leading the game.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think women's football has historically been slow on these things. And we've seen leagues like the WNBA really lead from the front, and some of the biggest tennis players in the world, Serena Williams, Naomi Osaka, have always been very vocal on these issues and use their platforms to make a stance. And I think women's football's always been a bit behind, and it's been really disappointing, and English women's football especially. It took a really long time for the WSL Instagram and Twitter accounts to put out a statement about Black Lives Matter when pretty much every single sports league in the world had already done one. And I think even maybe the FA itself had done one. I know obviously words, you know, actions speak louder than words, and putting out a statement doesn't really mean very much. But on the weekend at the Community Shield, the players took a knee, and this is, you know, really 6 months after the Black Lives Matter movement really hit the UK in the wake of the death of George Floyd. So it just felt like women's football had really been lagging behind, and we saw a lot of tension at the NWSL Cup with the anthems and kneeling, and it felt like the league could have taken a stance on that and not played the anthem. And there was so much to be proud about with the NWSL Challenge Cup, and Lisa Baird deserves a lot of credit for how she put that together. Having only joined the league in February, she put together a really successful tournament.
Got everybody paid.
Everyone got paid with zero positive tests. She got new sponsors on board. They pretty much paid for the cost of the tournament using insurance for COVID tests, using sponsorship, getting the media rights deal, getting record viewing figures. It was an extremely successful event. But the issues around Black Lives Matter really did kind of create a bit of a cloud over it because of the tension that it was and pressure it was creating on the players, who shouldn't have to be dealing with that. It was an emotional time with the pandemic alone, let alone everything else which was going in the world and especially the United States. And to not support the players in that way, I think, was really wrong. And I think, you know, they should have taken a stance and just said, we're not going to play the anthem and we're going to support our players and maybe empower them to create something like the NWSL Black Players a lot earlier. And it's great that they've done it now, and hopefully the league has now realised that it needs to step up. And it'll be interesting to see the impact this has in England, but we have so few Black women playing in England now at the top level that it's a real issue that needs to be tackled. And there are a few voices talking about it within the game, mainly Black women who are having the discussions and pushing the conversation forward. But it's such a structural issue. It is, you know, really has structural racism at its core. The way the women's football system in England works is that, you know, training grounds are based often in the middle of nowhere. So whether it's an elite men's training ground like Cobham, which you know, is hard to access by public transport, or London Colney where Arsenal are, or even, you know, Harlington where Queen's Park Rangers are, you need a car to get there. You need a parent who can drive you. So they often won't have, they can't be at work. They need to also have access to a car. So you need that ability, which lots of young girls won't have, because they might have two parents that are working. They might not own a car. They might live in an inner city, so they only have access to public transport. All these things which exclude a really large group of people. And then you have sort of center of excellences, which are based in regional areas that aren't near urban cities. So you're also cutting off a lot of people. So I think there's structural things at the core of this issue that need to be dealt with. And I think the concern is, since the pandemic, the FA's had to make a lot of cuts because of financial reasons, and every single national governing body in the UK and around the world has had the same issue, and it's been a tough time for the sports industry. So I think what's worrying is I don't think those structural issues are being challenged and will be improved because of the financial situation that's facing the FA. And it seems like it's only going to get worse before it gets better. And we're looking at now a very white sport in England that could continue to be very white for a very long time. And you've also created a culture that doesn't seem very appealing to girls that aren't white.
The only kind of positive swing, I agree with everything you said, but I will say that to have Enya Luko in the role that she has at Aston Villa, I think is a huge moment for English football altogether, you know, matching someone like Les Ferdinand in the men's game. But in women's football in particular, going off like everything you just said and the demographics and the way the game is sculpted, I think to have any there, especially after what happened 3 years ago and Mark Sampson, I think is a sign of growth. And I think when we talk about the NWSL Black Players Association, we look at like what the league is performing and what the league is actually doing. And so I think there's a feeling that someone like Lisa Baird, for all her good chat, is not really backing it up. And so I think at least there are some concrete signs, even if the overall conversation, the people in the room, the diversity is not there, the racism is still rearing its head. I do think someone like Enya Luko is going to enact change. And that's really, really cool to see. All right, we're going to take a quick break and then we're going to come back with some FA WSL previews. And we're back. All right, we're going to do a quick preview game by game of everything that's going on in the FA WSL this weekend, starting with Manchester City, who are traveling to Aston Villa at 2:30 p.m. on Saturday. Flo, what do we need to know about Aston Villa?
I like the way you went for the American style, Man City at Aston Villa, rather than the, you know, Villa at home to Man City.
I've been converted.
You've been converted. Yeah, I've kind of focused on Villa for this one, and you touched on Enya Luko there earlier, and so excited to have her back in the game. I was surprised by the move because I thought she was really enjoying the media side of things, having worked as a pundit on a couple of different World Cups and channels, etc. So I think it's a great move. It's a really interesting move for her to go into, and it shows commitment from another big men's club. And also, we've already seen quite a quick impact from her. She's brought her good friend Anita Asante over from Chelsea. Fantastic player, been in the game forever, and, you know, has a lot of England caps to her name. Really amazing woman as well. I've worked with her on a couple of things. She is really passionate about everything to do with girls and women's rights, and really involved in Amnesty International as well. Gemma Davies, Villa's coach, really exciting young coach.
Only 27.
I know. What are we doing with our lives? Absolutely bossed the championship last season, completely unbeaten, and definitely deserved to get promoted after the season was unfortunately cancelled. And one person I'm really excited to be watching, and I hadn't really heard too much about her, but Diana Silva, who they've signed from Sporting Lisbon, sounds like an exceptional player. She's 25. She has 58 caps for Portugal and 13 goals. And her Sporting stats are amazing. So she has 62 goals and 78 appearances for Sporting. And I think she sounds like she's going to be a really good player. So I feel like I may have bigged her up a little bit, but just from looking at her stats, I think she's going to be really impactful. And I think she's going to be the ones to watch, one of the ones to watch in the WSL. And she's not a big name, but I think she is going to, she's going to be good.
I just ordered my silver shirt after you said
that. That was quick. That was
so
good.
It's quick, but it's shipped for delivery.
I haven't even said a score, but I think Man City will win, but I think I'm excited to see what Villa can bring to the table.
Last time they met was in the Conte Cup, and I think Villa got battered 4-0. So I think it's all up from there. City, on the other hand, I think obviously probably one of the favourites. We all know them, you know, huge signings with Lavelle and Mewis. I think what they announced today, that Lauren Hemp's going to be out for 4 or 5 weeks with a hamstring injury after going off in the Community Shield. And I think I'm gutted, because for me, the most exciting player at City is Chloe Kelly. And it really feels like it's cool to see. Often, I think in women's football, there's been a lot of these bigger teams plucking like international stars, like your Mewis's and Lavelle's. And I think seeing someone like Kelly's trajectory, kind of dipping in and out of other teams, youth teams, although I think that's actually a trend happening with like Lauren James coming out of Arsenal and then ending up at Man United. I think you're seeing these players knock around a little bit and then get back up to the elite level. And I think seeing City, I was hoping for Hemp on one side and Kelly on the other, but now with Hemp out, I think seeing Kelly on Saturday, I'm really, really, and I thought she was just fantastic in the Community Shield. And obviously so many great players, but I think seeing Kelly this season after like just so many worldies last year for Everton, I think is probably one of the players I'm most excited about. And Gemma Bonner, who I thought had another good game. You know, they did a decent job trying to keep Chelsea out.
Deserves way more England caps.
England caps. And I thought it was nice to see her again. I kind of had maybe forgotten about her a little bit as you get like last, it felt like the last time I was really watching players with the She Believes. And so seeing her on Saturday was really nice as well. All right, next up, we've got Arsenal versus Reading, which is happening on Sunday.
Are we doing score predictions or?
Yeah, give me a score for Villa City. I mean, I think we both feel like City, so.
I'm going to go 3-1 City. I think Villa will get a goal.
You think Villa will get a goal? I think it'll be 3-0. But I really like the look of Villa this year, so I feel bad when it's like a one-sided game like that. Especially when you don't want an 11-1 on your hands.
Yeah, but scoring in your first WSL game against one of the best teams in the league who've just signed two huge US international players is pretty decent.
Fair enough. Then the early kickoff on Sunday is Arsenal-Reading, which is kind of a sneaky great game. I feel like Reading have kind of been hiding in the shadows for a long time. A lot of veterans on the team. I think Kelly Chambers seems to really like older players. Like it feels like with Carter's coming in from Arsenal and Jess Fishlock, who I absolutely love coming over from the NWSL, it feels like they have the pieces to be a great team. But it feels very like football manager. You know what I mean? It feels like you go out and sign these kind of well-known names, but when I'm trying to picture how they're going to play on Sunday, I don't really have an idea in my head. I also have a real soft spot for Reading covering the Houston Dash. Rachel Daly's obviously in England right now, signed a new contract, but we are maybe led to believe that she's going to find a loan somewhere. I just have this weird feeling she's going to end up at Reading.
Hi, it's future Theo here. It's 8:10 in the morning in New Orleans, Louisiana. I've just woken up and Rachel Daly has just signed for West Ham United. I just want to let everyone know that when we recorded the podcast, whilst her whereabouts in England were known, where she was going to play this season was still unknown. So I'm sorry for any prognosticating that she might end up at different clubs. Anyway, enjoy the podcast and welcome Rachel Daly.
In terms of Arsenal, there's been a lot of Aussie imports over there, and they're kind of becoming the Aussie and Swiss team in the league with so many internationals playing there. Steph Catley, I think, is a fantastic addition. Aussie vice-captain, got loads of caps for the international team, experienced, and I think they needed that. they lost Louise Quinn, who's gone to Fiorentina. Jen Beattie got injured against PSG. So they need that strength in defence. Leah Williamson, obviously Arsenal legend, but I think they needed a bit of height, strength, a bit of a bully next to her. And I think Steph Catley provides that. They've also brought in Lydia Williams, another Aussie. Obviously, Joe Montemurray is Aussie. So a lot of Aussies like working with him, unsurprisingly. But I think losing Emma Mitchell is also a shame. She was on loan to Spurs, but she's moved on to Reading, actually. So I think it's going to be an interesting season for Arsenal. I think Malin Gut is a good signing, and she'll be with her fellow Swiss players. But doesn't seem like they're willing to go as big as Chelsea and Man City at the moment with the investment.
Yeah, I think Arsenal real kind of turned themselves into real flat track bullies, kind of really smashing those smaller clubs and struggling against Chelsea and City. And so I just wonder whether or not a team like Everton or Reading could try and upset Arsenal and try to squeeze into the fourth third, if Arsenal get a few injuries, or whether or not they'll plow on and kind of challenge for second place. But this game last year had some of the best goals all season from Kim Little, that one where she knocks it to Leah Williamson and then she knocks it back. And then
such a good goal.
Unbelievable goal. That goal just completely did the round.
I guess what Arsenal have in their favour is that Gareth Taylor is, new to City. And he's only, if I'm correct, ever worked in boys football. So it will be a bit of an adjustment. So I think that could play into Arsenal's favour, and they might be able to get that second Champions League spot, because it might take him a while to get used to English women's football, having come from the City setup, but having not worked in girls or women's football before.
And Australian fans out there who I know will be trying to watch Arsenal, obviously, because that's the early kickoff, I think it's about a 10:30 PM kickoff in Melbourne. So make sure you try and catch that on the FA Player.
Could be worse. 10:30 PM is manageable.
Oh, they've pushed that one forward for the Aussies. That's no doubt. Next up on Sunday is Bristol versus Everton. Bristol didn't win a single game at home last season.
And they are changing homes, so maybe that will bring...
So they got rid of that. They got rid of the whole stadium based on that stat.
It was a terrible stadium, honestly, awful.
Well, they didn't win a game there, so good start. What do you think Bristol's hopes this season will be? I mean, beyond just kind of staying in the league, and what do you think their hopes will be on Sunday?
I think it's going to be a tough one. I have them and Birmingham as favourites for relegation.
Yeah.
Tanya Oxtoby is a fantastic manager. She is very well educated. She studies the game a lot. She has the top qualifications you can have. She's really into psychology and player management. But unfortunately, I don't think she's getting the investment. They've lost some really important players. Poppy Patterson being the biggest of those, who is a core part of their defence. Lauren Dykes as well, who made over 100 appearances for the club. She will be in an assistant manager role, but she'll still be playing for her hometown Cardiff City on the side. But those are big losses for the club. But on the positives, they've got Sophie Badgley, one of the best goalkeepers in the league, and they've got Ebony Salmon, who had a really breakout season last year. Don't think many people had her on their radar as someone who was going to really break through. I think people thought she was good, but I don't think people saw her as becoming, a starting WSL forward. And she became a bit of a super sub last year. And every single time she played a role in a Bristol City game, she would score. And I'm looking forward to seeing her grow. She's only 19, so she's got a lot of football ahead of her. She was playing for Man U and then never kind of broke through. So now she's ended up at Bristol City with a Sheffield United loan move in between. But I think there's some positives there, but I do worry about their sort of total package. And I don't think there's enough quality.
Yeah, it feels like for some of these smaller clubs, to use a word I don't love, but like, if you can keep it tight, you might give yourself a chance. I think United and Casey Stoney did that really well in their first season. And to some extent, so did Spurs. There's kind of this quirk, which I think is based because the league is so top heavy. But last season, there were 40 games with clean sheets. And in 39 of those, the team with the clean sheet won the game. There was only one 0-0, which actually I think involved Bristol City. And you kind of feel like if you can keep a clean sheet and keep the game tight, you really, really give yourself a chance, because once you go one goal behind, and you try and chase the game and your heads drop, it suddenly becomes a boat race. And so I feel like teams like Arsenal and City, and even like West Ham at times actually had some decent at scoring goals, you feel like you can really get the game away from you. And so I just worry about Bristol. If they don't keep the game tight, can they chase the game? Everton, on the other hand, though, I feel like it's been going back to this idea of like the WSL being at a crossroads. I feel like Everton, for me, is the most encouraging side of this league is in really good shape. This league is in really good investment. And it felt like, you know, maybe it was a quiet summer for Willie Kirk. And then suddenly, you know, Emsley arrives, who he worked with at Hibernian in 2013, and Valerie Govan as well. And you suddenly just, this Everton side looks really well poised to kind of maybe again make a leap, in at least into fourth. But maybe, I don't know, I don't want to be overly positive, but I just wonder what you could do with a striker like that, who at the World Cup last year was so bullish and so kind of intense. I thought Valerie Govan's goal, like it was the Brazil game where she almost knocks out Barbara, I think, in the Brazil goal. And she scores the header, but it's given a foul on the keeper. And then about 10 minutes later, she scores with her next touch in the box. And I just think to have a player like that, again, at one of these kind of underdog middle tier teams, I just think is so exciting. And to see, you know, if Everton could get a scout. Last season, Everton beat everyone at home apart from Arsenal, City and Man United. And so it's this kind of classic thing of like, you get beaten by these teams and you beat these teams. Everton split home and away with Reading. And I feel like Everton, if they can kind of just keep winning those games they're meant to win and then just maybe nick a point off United, maybe nick a point off Arsenal, beat Arsenal at home, you never know. Next game is Brighton versus Birmingham on Sunday, 2:30 p.m. kickoff. It's kind of a funny one. Feels like, you know, again, you say Birmingham are going to struggle. It feels like if you could get points in this one early, you're going to be off to a good start. How do you feel about Birmingham's chances, I guess, going off the back of Bristol? They're going to be right down there.
Yeah, I feel really sorry for Birmingham fans. I follow a lot on Twitter. Shout out Craig Hadley. Who does the Great Since 68 podcast and writes about Birmingham City. Obviously, a huge history in the women's game. If you look at some of the big players who've played for England, a lot of them come through Birmingham City. Karen Carney, who, in my opinion, is one of the best pundits in British football, Eniola Aluko, Birmingham, Laura Bassett, Birmingham, Ellen White was obviously recently at Birmingham. So they've got such a good history in women's football, but recently things have really tailed off. And some of that is down to the departure of Mark Skinner going to Orlando, obviously a really good move for him and an opportunity that you can't turn down. But since then, things have kind of unraveled. He's also a Birmingham boy, so was really invested in, you know, the culture of the club and the community. And I thought the choice of Marta, I'm not going to try and pronounce her last name, but Chilean coach who came in, was quite an interesting one. And they started off really well, beating Chelsea away 3-2. Ellen White, last minute winner, you know, stunned Emma Hayes into silence that. And I thought, wow, okay, this is kind of interesting. You know, they've gone with a sort of edgy pick here, going with a Hispanic coach who doesn't really speak English, but obviously has a really distinct style of football that she wants to bring to Birmingham. But it just didn't work out. She really fell out with the players. I think communication being part of it. And they didn't quite understand what she wanted to do. And I think her ideas were potentially a bit too complex for what they had been playing previously. Anyway, it all sort of ended in tears and they came really close to relegation, but they managed to bounce back. But what I think now with Carla Ward, they've got is a really solid choice, a nice up and coming, exciting coach to have. Took Sheffield United to their best ever finish, second in the championship behind Villa last season. I think a coach a lot of people had their eye on, and Birmingham did well to get her. But a bit like Bristol City, it's going to be a tough job for her, because if you haven't got the tools to do what you want and bring that stability, it's going to be a really, you know, a real recovery year for them. Rachel Corsi is a really important signing, a big name that the fans can get behind, because they lost Carice Harrop, you know, a club legend who'd spent her whole career at Birmingham City. And I'm sure it was a really hard decision to come to for her to leave the club. But they lost her, and not only that, but they lost some of their bigger names as well. So it was really important.
Lucy Staniforth.
Yeah, Lucy Staniforth, who has been wanting to leave for ages, put in a transfer request after the World Cup, didn't manage to leave, and now finally got her move to Man U. And I think it's going to be a tough one, but I'm glad that they've got Rachel Corsi. Bree Vasali obviously left, went on to win the Challenge Cup with Houston Dash.
Legend.
Chloe Arthur joined Villa a year after Emma Follis joined Villa. So they've lost two important players to local rivals. I think it's going to be a tough one for Birmingham, but I just want to see them rebuild. And I hope with Carla Ward, they've picked a manager who they can really grow with and is a long-term leader for them. And they can almost start from scratch a little bit, because the last year and, well, the last sort of, yeah, year has been really tough.
Yeah, I feel like Brighton are going to really target this game as getting points on the board early. I think Hope Powell's such a canny manager, and I think there's going to be they're going to have to come out of the traps really fast. But I really, really like the signing of Denise O'Sullivan at the NWSL, who I think has quietly been one of the most important players for the North Carolina Courage, who are kind of serial winners. And I really like this mix of Hope Powell and her experience with someone like Denise O'Sullivan. Brighton, they're not going to be in that kind of like top four challenging, but I think they can really build on probably quite a disappointing last year in regards to goals. And I think they'll have a really, really strong spine that might be, again, if they can keep it tight and get through some of these closer games, I think I don't have any worries of them going down personally. Let's get a score prediction for that one.
I'm quite worried it's going to be 0-0. Brighton struggled to score goals. Birmingham struggled to score goals last season.
I'm going to say Birmingham go up 1-0 with a Rachel Corsi header, and then Brighton come back to win 2-1.
Okay.
Heartbreak. Next up is Spurs versus West Ham on Sunday. I feel kind of sneaky excited about West Ham. Again, kind of in the Brighton equation of being a team that you feel like are going to be safe, but have sort of quietly brought in a couple of players that seem really exciting. Ruby Grant is kind of interesting. Arsenal youth team flexed out of Arsenal to go to University of North Carolina, but then her scholarship fell through because of COVID. And so now she's signed like a short-term deal, I think just for this year with West Ham. Does that sound right? I've kind of like read something about that, and I thought it was a really interesting story. And I'm kind of excited to see if she gets some minutes ahead of kind of going on to pursue a college career in the States. And sort of, I think she'll be an interesting one for comparing, you know, players like Rachel Daly or Claire Emsley, who've done similar. The other player I really, really am excited to see in West Ham is Norm Mustafa, who gave a really, really good interview on Common Goals, which I really recommend checking out, who I think will bring some freshness again, like only 18 years old, played in Sweden, and has like a lot of really interesting stories comparing herself to Zlatan Ibrahimovic, more so to do with the idea of being an immigrant in Sweden and how hard it is to sort of not be blonde hair and blue eyed. And I think it touches on a lot of what we were talking about earlier about like the diversity of the game, you know, who is being seen, who is being promoted, and why, you know, football is for everyone. And I think her story will be really, really exciting to see her kind of progress as like a figurehead for the league. What about Spurs, Flo?
Yeah, well, just to add, I obviously already mentioned Maz Pacheco earlier, and I think there's been some big departures for West Ham, and Yulia Simic being one of them, but they've managed to tie Alicia Lehmann, Jilly Flackerty, Cho So-hun, Adriana Leon, and Kenza Dali all to new contracts. So I think that's a good thing. And obviously Matt Beard, really experienced coach, being in women's football a long time now. They had a bit of a disappointing season last season because West Ham have invested a lot into women's football. So I think they would have liked to do a little bit better than they did, but I think they still have that ambition there. Spurs,
I feel like they're a bit on and off. They scored a lot of goals.
They're very inconsistent.
They won a lot of games, but maybe didn't quite. Again, this idea of like how teams can grind, maybe.
Yeah, and they got absolutely battered by Chelsea, which wasn't. Yeah,
is that 8-0?
Yeah, and it was pretty embarrassing, I think, for everyone involved.
Well, Jilly Flatterty, I'm sure.
Yeah, everyone was pretty mortified. Obviously, Matt Beard was absolutely fuming. In terms of Spurs, yeah, I think, obviously, last season was their first season in the WSL. So,
and a good one.
Yeah, and a good one. I think expectations weren't that high, being a new kid on the block. And they haven't really gone big with their sort of strategy. They're not trying to sign huge names. They're being, you know, pretty strategic. They kept on the same coaching team, obviously, that have been there for a very long time now and took them up. And I think they're trying to do things the right way, which I appreciate. And they signed a lot of players when they got promoted who had WSL experience. They did, you know, get rid of quite a few players who helped them get up in the first place, but they really went for a safe, solid approach. But you know, this is their second season now. So perhaps they overachieved last year, but they need to maybe show some ambition. And what that is, I'm not quite sure. Like, what's their identity going to be? Because sometimes you do need a bit of a star name to create a bit of excitement around the club and also get yourself, you know, a nice juicy cup run and all those important things which create, you know, excitement among the fans as well. Last year was great because they had that big win at London Stadium against West Ham, which I think fans really enjoyed. I know Lucy Quinn still talks about it on a daily basis. And they also had that game, you know, North London Derby at Spurs' new stadium. So they had those moments, but it's just about building on that. And that's what I'm kind of waiting for from Spurs. I think signing Caris Harrop is a great signing for them. I think they needed a bit more solidity at the back. Yeah, I think I'm really interested to see how they do this season. In terms of this game, I'm going to go for a West Ham win.
Oof.
1-0.
That's dark. That's dark for all the Spurs fans out there. All right, we'll finish off with the real marquee game of the week, the one that NBCSN will be showing, BT Sport will be showing, correct? Manchester United, Chelsea.
Oh, yeah, I think they
are. A late kickoff on Sunday, which really, it doesn't really get any bigger than that. Or 2:30 p.m., I think it is, 9:30 a.m. on the East Coast, midnight in Australia. I feel so excited for this game because as much as I love, it's this kind of love-hate relationship with Chelsea. And I kind of love the idea. I love what they're doing in me. And the better their team gets, especially now with Harder, I love the idea. And I really have just sort of, Man United are going to do something special. And I think Casey Stoney and the way she sets up this team, especially with all these young players, I just think they're kind of fearless and they keep things tight, but they also have a lot of creativity. And I don't know. I have a feeling this could be an upset.
You think Man U could win?
I think Man U could win on Sunday.
Wow. I'm shocked.
Do you feel like Chelsea this season, Flo, it's all or nothing? You feel like they're expected to win the league and the Champions League and now they have the depth of squad?
Yeah, it's definitely all or nothing. They've invested in the last, you know, 9 months alone, they've invested, you know, nearly £1 million really on Sam Kerr and just piled all harder between them. So this is a real all or nothing moment, definitely. But I don't think they're going to win the Champions League. I think they'll get to the semi-finals maybe, but I think they are probably 1 or 2 years off going all the way. But I think they're, even before Kerr and Harder arrived, they were looking like bullies. You know, the talent on the team was so relentless. I think Casey Stoney's always done quite well to frustrate Chelsea. But I think Man U rely quite a bit on their fans who are fantastic and very noisy and very loud. And I think starting the season at home without them is a real shame because, you know, on paper, this could have been such a good season opener with the fans there. So that's the only disappointment is the fact that it's not going to be quite the dramatic opener we would have hoped. But I think Man U will get a goal, but I still see Chelsea coming through like 3-1.
I'm going to go for a 1-0 United. Wow. United
smash
win.
Smash and grab.
With another very frustrating Sam Kerr performance. Keep an eye out for if she gets a game, Ivana Fuso, new United signing, captain of the German under-19s. I was doing some real YouTube digging to try and watch some of her highlights. And the only thing I could find was for Basel last season, she scored one goal every two games. The only thing I could find was fan footage off a phone on the sideline. But it was a two.
Welcome to the world of women's football. There you go. I know, no data and mobile phone footage.
It was 2 hour footage. It was the whole game though. So you, all her games are on YouTube, but they're filmed on the phone and they're all the whole game. So you have to fast forward.
Love that.
But she did score the winner against Young Boys, or I suppose they should be called Young Girls. It's a really, really quintessential sort of like pace, strikers, like shouldering up against the keeper, kind of any Aluko sort of goal, just getting the ball and then like dribbling in, bearing down on goal and tucking it away. So I think she could be, especially for like a counter attack, if Chelsea are kind of bombing forward, I think if she comes on late, that could be one to watch. Just looking ahead for the whole season predictions, who have you got for the kind of winner and second place Champions League places?
It's boring, it's predictable, but they're paying for it. Chelsea and City, 1-2.
Hashtag capitalism.
Yeah.
I feel you. I'm going to try and be creative and say Chelsea winning, but Arsenal coming second. Top scorer in the division?
Miedema or Beth England. Couldn't decide.
I'm going to go with Miedema. I'm hoping that she'll keep on a tear.
Keep on keeping on.
Relegation?
It's tight between Birmingham and Bristol, but I'm going to go for Bristol because I think they lost too many important players and haven't replaced them. And those heavy defeats, I think, are going to take their toll on the players that are left mentally. So, yeah. Bristol.
Yeah, I could see it coming down to goal difference, but I'm going to say Bristol as well. I'm just worried that they're not going to have enough to just get over the line and stay where they need to be. And a kind of prediction for one last one for like sort of a league first. Like, what do you think is going to happen for the first time? Could be a player getting a call up, could be an attendance record, it could be, I guess, someone, you know, a team winning 2 FA Cups in one season could happen this year. Yeah, do you have any predictions for sort of the league first?
I'm going to predict that potentially a women's Chelsea shirt player might outsell a men's one. It's basically, you know, are more people going to buy Thiago Silva / Timo Werner's shirt, or are more people going to buy Sam Kerr or Pernell Harder's shirt? Or even, you know, are more people going to buy Rose Lavelle's City shirt than any other City newcomer? So I have a feeling maybe we'll see the outselling of a male player shirt for the first time.
Huge prediction. My prediction is we are going to see Rachel Daly's goal in the FAWSL.
It's basically just the Rachel Daly podcast.
It's the Rachel Daly podcast. And that's our show.
Yeah, tune in for daily updates on where she is in the UK. Hey.
That deserves a whole podcast itself. Well, look, thank you so much for being with us, and thank you so much for being excited about all the women's football that's going to be happening, kind of kicking off this weekend. But it's going to be, you know, a really exciting year with friendlies next month. Obviously, quite a kind of fragmented season. Conti Cup groups have been announced, but we'll get onto that soon enough. And then last year's FA Cup, this year's FA Cup. I mean, you know, how many cups could you want? Flo, lots of love back to London and lots more stories to come.
Yeah, see you on the other side.